Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, January 4th. Sheriff's Office grant gets County Leader's nod. Senate Bill 22 allows qualified rural Texas sheriff's offices to receive money to add to deputy and sheriff salaries. The story was written by Ben Schaffer. Midland County Commissioners approved their intent to apply for sheriff's and prosecutor's office grants made possible by Texas Senate Bill 22 during their meeting on Wednesday. Senate Bill 22 allows qualified rural Texas sheriff's offices to receive money to add to deputies and sheriff's salaries, among other uses. Sheriff David Kreiner said the Texas legislature implemented this bill because deputy pay is usually lower than most law enforcement offices. Although the funds from the grant can be used for equipment, Kreiner said the sheriff's office typically relies on donations and Midland County to provide them, so this grant would be used to increase base salaries within the sheriff's office. Kreiner said increased salaries would help the sheriff's office hire and retain officers and personnel. Midland County has a population larger than 50,000 and less than 300,000. According to Senate Bill 22, this means that the county could receive $500,000 from the grant. Although the court voted to apply for the grant, some commissioners asked questions about the grant. This grant will most likely be a topic of discussion at future court sessions. County Judge Terry Johnson had a concern about jailers not being included on a document listing those who are slated to receive salary upgrades should the county receive grant money. Senate Bill 22 states that jailers are eligible for salary upgrades, according to the Texas Capitol website. Johnson said that because a new jail will be built soon, the county will also need as many quality jailers as it can find. Quote, it, that is the bill, tries to bring everybody up to a minimum. It tries to bring sheriffs up to a minimum of $75,000. It tries to bring the deputies up to a minimum, so everything is addressed as minimums or way above the minimums. I already understand that. But I still think we should address the positions that are mentioned in the grant instead of a shotgun approach throughout the whole department, Johnson said Wednesday. Sheriff Kreiner said jailers in Midland are some of the best compensated in the state, and the focus for this grant is to increase patrol deputy salaries. Precinct 1 Commissioner Scott Ramsey said Midland set the standard in Texas regarding jailer pay when they voted to increase their salaries last year. Quote, I understand not putting the jails in there just because we have basically already done them, Ramsey said. Ramsey added that patrol deputies in Midland County need to receive higher pay for the county to remain competitive with other sheriff's offices around the state. The motion passed 4-1 for the county to apply for the sheriff's and prosecutor's office grant made possible by Texas Senate Bill 22. Taking charge. New Pioneer CEO focuses on company as blockbuster merger with ExxonMobil awaits. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. As the blockbuster merger of ExxonMobil and Pioneer Natural Resources moves toward its resolution at some point in the first half of the year, Pioneer is transitioning to a new chief executive officer. Richard Dealey has assumed the position of chief executive officer, succeeding Scott Sheffield, who has taken the non-executive role of special advisor to the CEO. Both will continue to serve on Pioneer's board of directors. Dealey, previously Pioneer's president and chief executive officer, has been credited with helping Pioneer enjoy a successful period of growth that saw the company build one of the strongest investment-grade balance sheets in the industry, become the largest oil producer in the state of Texas, report 6 consecutive years of operational efficiency improvements, and successfully integrate the acquisitions of Parsley Energy and Double Point Energy. Dealey took a few moments from settling into his new role as CEO to participate in an email interview to discuss his new role as Pioneer prepares to merge into ExxonMobil. Question: pending the acquisition by ExxonMobil, what will your role be in the transition, and what will your role be afterward? Answer: at this point, I am not really thinking about any future roles. My focus is directed toward continuing to work alongside our 2,000 dedicated employees to execute on our program and deliver value to our shareholders. While we are taking steps to plan for an integration with ExxonMobil, we continue to operate as 2 independent companies until the deal closes. Question: as the new CEO, what is your vision for Pioneer, at least until the acquisition is completed? Answer: until the merger is completed, we are continuing to operate as an independent company and focus on the strategy we laid out for our investors. That means growing annual oil production between 3 to 5%, with total production growing a bit more, as efficiently and economically as we can. Of course, at the same time, we're working constructively with the FTC in its review of the transaction, and we continue to expect the deal to be completed in 2024, subject to the fulfillment of the closing conditions. Question: when you spoke at last year's State of Oil and Gas Luncheon, presented by the Midland Chamber of Commerce, you were upbeat about the industry while also looking beyond your traditional Spraberry activity. What are your feelings for this year? Answer: I am still upbeat on the industry and think the world will continue to need low-cost, low-emissions, and reliable energy that the U.S. provides. Moving forward in 2024, we see Brent oil prices averaging $80 or more. We're not at those price levels today, but I do think we're going to see a pickup in the forecasted global demand growth, which will soak up the incremental supply we have today and contribute to a more balanced market as we progress through 2024 and into 2025. Question: what about Pioneer's involvement with the communities where you work? Exxon, through its XTO subsidiary, is also quite active in the communities where it works. Answer: there is no change in our philosophy and strong support for our communities. We will continue working to ensure the communities where we live and work flourish. I am confident that after merger, the combined company will continue to be strongly committed to our communities. Question: finally, what are your overall thoughts on the mergers and acquisition market? ExxonMobil Pioneer kicked off a run of significant mergers as 2023 came to a close, and 2024 is expected to bring more of the same. Answer: my primary focus is on our own business these days. It is hard to predict what other companies will do given the recent pullback in commodity prices and current interest rate environment. New car dealership gets the green light. Planning and zoning okays request for specific use designation. The story was written by Miller McEwen, oil editor. A new car dealership is headed for Southeast Midland. Planning and Zoning Commissioners Tuesday unanimously approved a request by Justin Smith for a specific use designation without term for an automobile or other motorized vehicle sales and service at 1016 Good Street. Smith is proposing to use the former Pleasures Detail and Mobile Wash as a car dealership. The property is currently vacant and is zoned C, Commercial District. Under zoning ordinances, automobile or other motorized vehicle sales and service is allowed in a commercial district. The site plan shows an overview of the property that will be used for car sales. There will be no outside display of cars, and 6 parking spots will be available for patrons. There is 5,000 square feet of existing building space. Of the 5,000 square feet, 4,633 square feet will be showroom. Another 367 square feet will be classified as office space. Under the specific use designation, all exterior light sources must be of a downlight type, indirect, fused, or shielded, and installed so as to reduce glare. No intermittent or flashing lights shall be permitted. All building facades must be of the same masonry materials that meet masonry regulations for the zoning district, and no exterior auditory devices are permitted. Proposed hours of operation are 9 a.m. through 4 p.m., Monday through Friday. Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, January 4th. Richard Stiegel, age 73, of Midland, lately of Comanche, Texas, passed away on December 21st. Richard was born on January 2nd, 1950, to Joseph Richard Stiegel and Bobby Wright Walker Lilliard in Midland, Texas. After graduating from Midland High School in 1969, he went on to fight in the Vietnam War as a Marine from 1969 to 1971. After Vietnam, he worked alongside his father, where he eventually owned and operated the Village Chevron Station in Midland. He sold the business in 2003. In 1967, Richard met Colleen Clark, and they wed in 1971, going on to have 3 children. After retiring in 2013, Richard spent his time at Possum Kingdom Lake fishing, Bandera, Texas, where he opened up a successful RV park, and Comanche, Texas, where he enjoyed his ranch, tending to his goats and cattle. Richard was predeceased by his parents, Joseph and Bobby, and 2 siblings, Ronnie and Donnie Lilliard. Richard is survived by his wife, Colleen Stiegel, sisters Sandra and Norman Lane, and Darianda and Roland Lormond, children Kelly, Michael, and Wind, and Shannon and Chris, as well as several grandchildren and 1 great-grandchild. Clarica Rika Tapers, age 71, of Midland, passed away on December 23rd. Rika was born on January 5th, 1952, in Midland, to Clarence Gibson Sr. and Rosetta Tate Moore. Rika is preceded in death by her husband, Enoch Tabers Jr., father Clarence Gibson Sr., mother Rosetta Tate, brothers K.T. Hudson, sisters Barbara Harris and Paula Thompson, and sister-niece Jeanette Harris. Left to cherish her memory is her dad, Howard Moore of Marlin, Texas, brother Clarence Gibson of Amarillo, sisters Charlie Dinkins of Anchorage, Alabama, and Linda Johnson of Marlin, Texas, 2 very best sister friends, Tampa Jones of Austin, Texas, and Vonda Thomas of Houston. She is also survived by sons Gary Gibson of Midland and Michael Tabers of Midland, daughters Sheila Tabers of Austin and Litsandra Hawkins of Midland, as well as several grandchildren, as well as 23 great-grandchildren and one great-great-grandchild. A viewing and visitation will be held at Mayberry Funeral Home in Midland from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. on Friday, January 5th. A viewing will be held on Saturday, January 6th from 9 to 11 a.m., followed immediately by a celebration of life service to begin at 11 a.m. Richard Milburn Whitman, age 84, passed away peacefully on December 26th at his daughter's home in Midland, Texas. Richard was born on August 1st, 1939, in Weymouth, Massachusetts, to Archie and Bernice Whitman. He was the firstborn of nine children. Richard graduated from high school in Massachusetts with the class of 1957. He went on to serve in the United States Air Force. Richard went to work for IBM in 1962 and retired after 30 years of service. Richard and Helen had one child, Joyce Marie. He had two grandchildren, Jeffrey Maxwell and James Richard Fritz. Richard is survived by his daughter Joyce and her husband D.J. Whitman, sisters Sandra Smith and Nancy Fuller of Massachusetts, brothers Bruce and Paul Whitman of Massachusetts, brother Robert Whitman of Florida, as well as several grandchildren. Richard is preceded in death by his parents, Archie and Bernice Whitman, brothers Arthur and Alan Whitman, sister Marilyn Duty, and wife Helen Marie Whitman. Memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, January 6th, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Nicole Andrenette McPherson was born on August 17, 1970, to Roy Davis and Teresa Johnson in Midland. She was raised in Midland and graduated from Legacy, formerly Robert E. Lee High School. On January 29, 1989, she married Malcolm DeAndre McPherson. While living in Midland, she was a member of Greater Ideal Baptist Church, where she served in various ministerial roles. In December 2010, Nicole earned a bachelor's degree from the University of Texas Permian Basin. In May 2016, Nicole earned her certificate in biblical studies from the Baptist Universities of the Americas. Nicole passed away on December 21st. She was preceded in death by her husband, Malcolm McPherson, mother, Teresa Yvette Hooper Johnson, and godmother, Brenda Myers. Left to cherish Nicole's memory are her two daughters, Constance Davis of Aubrey, Texas, and Clatrice McPherson of Midland, Texas, one son, Malcolm McPherson, Jr. of Odessa, father, Roy E. Davis of Lakeland, Florida, four siblings, Terry Davis of Gulfport, Mississippi, Thomas Davis of Midland, Tamia Lewis of Lakeland, Florida, and John Davis of Midland, as well as three grandchildren, one godbrother, two godsisters, four goddaughters, two godsons, and many loving nieces, nephews, and other family members. A funeral service will be held at 11 a.m. on Friday, January 5th, at True Light Christian Fellowship in Midland, with Michael D. Wheeler officiating. The interment will follow at Ellis Rest Haven Memorial Park in Midland. In lieu of flowers, the family requests donations to Greater Ideal Family Life Center, care of Summer Day Camp, 301 South Tyler Street in Midland, 79701. Online condolences may be shared www.slaymemorial.com. Arrangements are under the direction of Terry Slay and Slay Memorial Funeral Center. Luther Edward Steele of Midland, Texas, peacefully passed away in Dallas, Texas, on December 30th. He was born in Crystal Falls, Texas, outside of Breckenridge, Texas, in May of 1929. Luther married Dorothy Jean Steele, and they were together until she passed away in 2004. In 2005, Luther married Ollie Dorton, and they were together until she passed away in 2018. He is survived by his daughter Debbie Steele Lemon and husband Richard of Carrollton, Texas, grandson Trevor Lemon of San Antonio, Texas, granddaughter Taylor Lemon of Innsbruck, Austria, and husband Karsten, as well as four great-grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, Luther requested donations to Hope Lutheran Church, 2003 North Hay Street, Midland, Texas, 79705. Visitation will be Thursday, January 4th, from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home, 1502 North La Mesa Road in Midland. A graveside service will be held Friday, January 5th, at 11 a.m. at Rest Haven Cemetery, 4616 North Big Spring, Midland, Texas. Celebration of life to follow at the cross he made for Hope Lutheran Church. Funeral arrangements are under the care of Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Online condolences may be made at asancheztfh.com. Daniel Ray Beecham, age 41, of Midland, passed away December 30th. Celebration of life will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, January 5th, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel in Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Jose Sergio Cano, age 95, of Odessa, passed away on December 29th. Cremation services entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Bobby Bankston was born on March 7, 1932, in Lubbock, Texas, and passed away on December 13th. Her parents, the Reverend Larkin Lee Hall and Mary Lily Hall, moved all over the state as Larkin preached and was a hospital nurse. Finally, after settling in Temple, Texas, Bobby met William Bankston, where they eventually married, and took off for the Golden State of California. On the way from Temple to California, they stopped in Midland, where they found a booming town in the desert of West Texas. Her father worked construction, and this was the place to be. Bobby Bankston lived 73 years of her life in Midland and worked hard all of her life. She's survived by three wonderful, loving children, daughter Claudia of Dallas, son Jim and wife Barbie of Trophy Club, Texas, and her caregiver of many years, son Bill of Midland, sister Ann Newman of Blue Ridge, Georgia, as well as grandchildren Ben and wife Jenna of Fort Worth, Belle and husband Isaac, also of Fort Worth, and numerous nieces, nephews, and cousins. A gravesite interment for Bobby will be held Saturday, January 6th at 3 p.m. at Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Home and Memorial Park, 4616 North Big Spring Street, Midland, Texas, 79705. Reverend Steve Brooks with First Methodist Church of Midland will officiate. Dora Aguirre Scott, age 71, of Spring Branch, Texas, passed away on December 25th. Born August 27, 1952, to the late Cruz and Euphemia Aguirre of Stanton, Texas. After leaving high school in Stanton, Texas, and working at Texas Instruments in Midland for several years. Dora was led to the healthcare industry, where she worked at Midland Memorial Hospital as a certified nurse's assistant and in private home health care for many years, where her compassion for helping others was seen and felt by all those around her. She is preceded in death by her father, Cruz Aguirre, and mother, Euphemia Aguirre, of Stanton, Texas, her spouse, Richard Morris Scott, of Midland, and stepson, Michael Scott, of Midland. She is survived by her daughter, Crystal Garza Miller, and son-in-law, John David Miller, from Spring Branch, Texas, son, Rene Ross Garza, from Spring Branch, Texas, son, Luis Luz Garza, and daughter-in-law, Carla Feresteig Garza, from San Antonio, stepson, Adam Scott, and his wife, Janelle DeHamel, of Salem, Oregon, as well as several grandchildren, siblings, Lelia Arguello, from Midland, and Anita Tenegue, of Beaumont, Texas, as well as a host of nieces, nephews, and extended family. Visitation will be held December 28th at Stanton Memorial Funeral Home in Stanton, with a rosary being recited at 7 p.m. Funeral services were held on Friday, December 29th at St. Joseph's Catholic Church in Stanton. Patricia Grace Hobbs, age 62, of Midland, passed away on December 26th. Cremation services have been arranged. Funeral arrangements are under the care of Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Online condolences can be shared at asancheztfh.com. Johnny Rangel, age 54, of Midland, passed away on December 30th. Johnny was born to Fabian and Teresa Rangel on September 27, 1969. Johnny was a loving husband, father, and uncle. He was happily married to Dolly Ann Maldonado for 31 years. Johnny is preceded in death by his father, Fabian Rangel, and sister-in-law, Lupe Rangel. He is survived by his mother, Teresa Rangel, sons Juanito Rangel, Jose Martinez, Michael Martinez, Faustino Martinez, Carlos Martinez, Mark Anthony Martinez, siblings Fabian Rangel, Carlos Rangel, Adam Rangel, and sister Evan Rangel. Juan is also survived by his beloved grandchildren. Viewing will be held Thursday, January 4th, from 12 p.m. to 9 p.m., and Friday, January 5th, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Chapel, with a prayer service on Friday, January 5th, at 6 p.m. Arrangements were made with Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to Pipkin at nts-online.net, or you can visit the website at www.LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com. Dennis Moyes, age 67, of Midland, passed away January 2nd. The family will receive guests from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Sunday, January 7th, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home in Midland. Graveside service will be held at 11:30 a.m. Monday, January 8th, at Rest Haven Memorial Park in Lubbock. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, January 4th, 2024. Happenings. What's Up with Midland by Morgan Taylor Thomas. On Colorado Street, Downtown Farmers Market, new location every Saturday. In downtown Odessa, first Friday. At La Hacienda, La Fiera de Ojinaga, January 26th. At the Horseshoe, Permian Basin RV and Boat Show, Friday through Sunday. Midland County Livestock Annual Show, January 10th through 13th. West Texas Wedding Expo, January 21st. Permian Basin Hiring Event, January 25th. West Texas Hunting Extravaganza, January 27th. At Tall City Brewing Company, Geeks Who Drink Trivia, every Tuesday. At Texas Sun Winery, Paint With Me, January 16th. At the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center, Ron White, January 11th. The Panhandlers, January 14th. West Texas Winds, Spring Recital, January 18th. Breaking Benjamin, Unplugged, January 23rd. Brian Reagan, January 25th. Jason Fabus Trio, January 27th. The Board Teachers Comedy Tour, January 28th. Pretty Women, the Musical, January 30th. At the Waystone, Cookie Encounter Workshop, January 20th. Three things to do in Midland, Odessa, January 5th through 7th, by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Explore First Friday in downtown Odessa. To kick off the new year, this month's First Friday in downtown Odessa showcases new stops along the trail for community members to engage in. The Odessa Arts booth will also give out free First Friday merchandise to anyone who spends $20 or more at any local shop or restaurant during event hours. Show receipt. January's participating businesses: Dough by Rabbit Brothers, homemade baked goods. Retro Game Hall, hosting tabletop and video games. Ector County Library, DIY diamond-painted bookmarks. Homemade wines, books, readings, prizes, and more. Joann's, 5th Street, extended hours. McJack's General Store, extended hours. Odessa Marriott, prime rib night. Patrick Clay's Tavern, $30 tattoos at Evil Ink Tattoos. Sacrificial Needle Tattoo, vendor market, live art demos, $40 fine line tattoos, other specials for tattoos and piercings. Skeliki Ballet, free ballet class. Starbucks Downtown, free typewriter poetry. And White Pool House, free tours of two-story brick Victorian. Friday, 6 to 9 p.m., downtown Odessa. Shop at the market. The Midland Downtown Farmers Market is back in full swing for the new year, keeping a full schedule through the winter months despite the cold. From tasting samples to on-site cooked breakfast, there's an array of ways for guests to get their morning grub while walking through the vendors. Expect homemade treats and goods, handcrafted art and hanging plant decor, woven plush toys, pet accessories and treats, freshly grown produce, handmade candles and self-care supplies, and even keychains or other knickknacks. Saturday, 9 a.m. to noon at 404 North Colorado. Plan your next outdoor adventure. The annual Permian Basin RV and Boat Show takes over the Horseshoe this weekend for a thrilling 3-day display of all things camping, fishing, and outdoor exploring. Floor plans will be on display along with discounted products, equipment, and more. Over $2,500 in giveaways will be awarded throughout the show's residency as well. RSVP at https://bit.ly/3HCPJK5. Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. at 2514 Arena Trail. A Night of Comedy with Ron Tater Salad White by Robin Bradshaw. Tickets are still on sale for the live performance for the popular cigar-smoking Texan Ron Tater Salad White for some comic relief at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center, January 11th. The performance is for a mature audience and is scheduled for one night only in Midland. Since the mid-1980s, White has made a name for himself touring small comedian clubs before reaching national fame in the early 2000s as one of the comedians featured on the Blue Collar Comedy Tour phenomenon. White has since toured solo and has been one of the top-grossing touring comedians in the country, according to the venue's website. In addition to selling out venues nationwide with his stand-up comedy tours, White also writes and has published 4 books, was nominated for 2 Grammys, and featured in the Cameron Crowe Showtime series Roadies. Doors to the show open at 7 p.m. Thursday, January 11th, and tickets are still on sale at the box office and available online. The venue is located at 1310 FM 1788 in Midland. For additional information and ticket inquiries to a show, visit the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center website. Catch Chicago live in Midland Valentine's Day. Tickets for the show are on sale now by Robin Bradshaw. Valentine's Day is around the corner, and fans of the classic band Chicago will have the opportunity for a date night at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center in Midland. The original 3 band members, including Robert Lamb on keyboards and vocals, Lee Loughnane on trumpet and vocals, and James Pankoff on trombone, will perform live, along with Wally Reyes Jr. on drums, Tony Obrota on guitar, Lauren Gold on keyboards and vocals, Ray Herman on sax and flute, Neil Donnell on vocals, Eric Baines on bass, and Ramon Ray Islas on percussion. The American rock band formed in 1967 in Chicago, Illinois, hence the band name Chicago, and has recorded 38 albums, selling millions of records, according to the band's website. Fans can expect to hear classic hit songs such as If You Leave Me Now, Does Anybody Really Know What Time It Is, and 25 or 6 to 4. Chicago has toured every year since the beginning. They've never missed a year, the venue states. Doors to the show open at 7 p.m. Wednesday, February 14th, and tickets are on sale now, with prices ranging from $70 to $135. The venue is located at 1310 FM 1788 in Midland. For additional information and ticket inquiries to a show, visit the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center website.
This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Health and Wellness for Wednesday, January 3rd, 2024. MMH's Medical Explorers Program. Developing future healthcare professionals. In a proactive move to inspire and cultivate the next generation of healthcare professionals, Midland Health has spent the last year developing a partnership with the Boy Scouts of America, BSA, to charter a Medical Explorers program. This innovative collaboration aims to provide high school students, ages 14 to 18, with a unique and immersive experience within the healthcare industry, offering them insights into various medical and hospital careers, fostering a passion for the field. The Medical Explorers Post 1950, recognizing the year the hospital was opened, was born out of Midland Health's commitment to community engagement and its recognition of the need to nurture the pipeline of future healthcare talent. Understanding the importance of early exposure to the medical field, the hospital leadership saw the Medical Explorers program as an ideal platform to connect with young, enthusiastic individuals eager to explore careers in healthcare. Wes Barnt, Vice President of Ancillary Services, leads the initiative for Midland Health. Quote, with the Medical Explorers program, we are exposing high school students to several possible careers in healthcare. We are planting seeds today for what will hopefully result in the next generation of nurses, physicians, respiratory therapists, radiologic technologists, pharmacists, clinical lab scientists, and other healthcare careers at Midland Health, end quote. Midland Health worked closely with unit leadership through the facility to design a range of activities that would provide a comprehensive view of the healthcare landscape to ensure a tailored and impactful experience for the participants. These activities include shadowing healthcare professionals, participating in hands-on medical simulations, and engaging in informational sessions about different medical specialties. As part of the partnership, Medical Explorers gain exclusive access to Midland Health's state-of-the-art facilities. This includes tours of specialized departments such as the emergency room, operating rooms, and diagnostic imaging centers. The hands-on exposure to advanced medical technology, such as the Da Vinci robot, provides students with a real-world understanding of the tools and equipment used in different medical specialties. The Explorers Post sits at 26 members at the end of 2023. When asked about the program, Explorer Secretary Chelsea Zubia said, quote, the Medical Explorers program provides various opportunities to students to explore the medical field. The program has helped me learn, grow, and make connections with medical professionals. I'm extremely grateful for my mentors, Mr. Wes and Mr. Kitt, end quote. Presley Forbes, president of Post 1950, says the Explorers program has had a meaningful impact on her. Quote, I joined the Medical Explorers because of my ninth grade health science teacher. She always pushed me to do whatever I dreamed of doing and had complete confidence in the plans I've created. The Medical Explorers leaders do a fantastic job at creating a fun environment for students to grow and create friendships while taking the next step toward their dreams in the medical field, end quote. Medical Explorer Post meetings are held on Sunday afternoon starting at 2 o'clock p.m. in the private dining room at the main campus. For more information about the Medical Explorers, visit our website at https://www.midlandhealth.org/main/medical-explorers. Resolutions. Fitness tops New Year's plans and survey. Lose weight, stop spending, seek counseling. It's not as simple as one would think, but improving fitness, finances, and mental health are top of mind when it comes to New Year's Eve resolutions for those looking to start anew. Quote, completely cutting off all expenses at once can be overwhelming and lead to feelings of deprivation, end quote, said Linda Chavez, founder and CEO of Seniors Life Insurance Finder, in an interview with Yahoo Finance. Quote, this can then result in impulse purchases or binge spending, ultimately throwing off your budget and financial goals. A new survey by Forbes Health / One Poll of 1,000 U.S. adults took a look at Americans' attitudes towards resolution setting and the goals prioritized heading into the new year. Data showed fitness, 48%, to be the most commonly selected resolution, whereas last year people prioritized mental health over physical health. Finances came in second with 38%, followed by improved mental health at 36%. Weight loss and an improved diet rounded out the top five, with 34% and 32% respectively. For those looking to get a better grip on their finances, quitting cold turkey won't necessarily help create a leaner overall budget. Quote, this approach can often backfire and end up causing more harm than good for your finances, end quote, said Chavez. The Charles Schwab Corporation, which offers brokerage, banking, and financial services, suggests five tips to boost one's budget. Create a budget. Commit to a savings and investment program. Manage your debt. Keep your debt load manageable and eliminate high-cost, non-deductible consumer debt. Optimize your portfolio. Create a strategy that will allow you to stay disciplined to diversify across and within all asset classes. Prepare for the unexpected. Protect yourself against large medical expenses with health insurance and buy life insurance if you have dependents or other obligations. Protect your estate. By designating a beneficiary or creating a will, attorneys and tax agencies won't decide the fate of your assets or minor children. When it comes to consistency with health and exercise goals, Anytime Fitness recommends setting clear objectives and achievable goals. According to its website, defining one's fitness resolutions tends to lead to making positive changes for overall health and well-being. SMART goals. Employing the SMART criteria, specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, time-bound, is a proven strategy for creating 2024 fitness resolutions that are both realistic and achievable. For instance, aiming to exercise four times a week or completing a certain number of kilometers in a month can be tangible and measurable targets. Breaking down long-term goals. Dividing ambitious New Year fitness goals into smaller, manageable milestones is key. For example, if the ultimate goal is to lose a specific amount of weight by the year end, breaking it down into monthly or quarterly targets makes it less daunting and more achievable. Quote, exercise demonstrates perseverance and drive working toward a goal, end quote, said Sabrina Romanoff, a Harvard-trained clinical psychologist and Forbes Health Advisory member in an interview with Forbes Health. Quote, this helps with confidence when facing challenges instead of succumbing to self-doubt. It's a tangible instance of when determination exceeds skill, and this will bleed into other facets of your life, end quote. Eating habits. Mayo recommends mindful eating year-round. The holidays have come and gone once again, and many of us are starting to think about just how much we indulged this season. Quote, when it came to eating, how did this past holiday season treat you? Which healthy habits did you maintain, and which ones did you neglect? End quote. Asked Lisa Hardesty, PhD, a clinical health psychologist at Mayo Clinic Health System in Mankato. Quote, it is easy to feel like a failure in relationship to maintaining our healthy focus. But consistency and allowing yourself grace are important concepts to remember over the holiday time. End quote. Shame, guilt, and disappointment are several feelings that can lead people to kickstart strict diets beginning January 1st. But drastic overnight changes to habits are rarely sustainable. That's why Hardesty recommends mindful eating throughout the year. Quote, with so much of our family and social time structured around food and the act of eating during the holidays, it's no wonder that we feel like we need a reset to our eating habits this time of year when the celebrations are over, end quote. Says Hardesty, quote, that there are healthier, more sustainable ways to approach eating habits, end quote. Here are Hardesty's recommendations to lessen your responsiveness to food triggers. Identify your, quote, why, end quote. Adopting a healthy eating mindset starts with identifying the reasons you want to eat healthier. What compelling reasons come up when you consider this question? Plan ahead. Having a plan is one of the most important things you can do. Anticipate when you may have more difficulty making healthy choices and create a solid plan for those times. Slow down. Instead of moving from dish to dish, First, survey the options in front of you and decide which ones you want and how much you want before adding food to your plate. Then, when you sit down to eat, savor your food and focus mindfully to help you make better choices compared to eating without conscious thought. Allow for indulgences. It's also important to allow yourself a few unhealthy food options, but decide when and where you will make those choices. When you eat those lower quality foods, be aware of your negative emotions and don't allow shame to perpetuate overindulgences. Additional techniques to help modify your eating behavior include bringing fruit and vegetables to holiday gatherings to create more options for yourself and others. Eating a light snack before attending holiday events to lessen the likelihood of overeating. Measuring and portioning your food over the holidays. Increasing your level of activity and exercise. Committing to making changes with someone close to you. Banking your calories if you know you'll attend an event with more food options available. Quote, don't despair if you temporarily lose control of your food choices, end quote, says Hardesty. Quote, remember, consistency is key, not perfection, end quote. Viruses in winter. Why do people get sick during cooler months? Respiratory viruses like COVID-19 and influenza surge in the colder months. And it's not just because people are spending more time indoors. Dr. Matthew Binneker, director of the Clinical Microbiology Molecular Lab and co-director of the Clinical Virology Lab at Mayo Clinic, explains what other factors promote virus spread in the winter. Quote, it's a really interesting phenomenon that we see with respiratory viruses like COVID-19 and influenza, where we see almost annually this surge of infections during the cooler months in the Northern Hemisphere. It usually happens anywhere between November and the end of February, end quote, says Binneker. Quote, most people think that it's just due to more people being indoors, which I think plays some role in it, end quote. Binneker says another factor is humidity. Quote, in the warmer months, there is more humidity, end quote, he says. Quote, and when we speak, when we cough, when we sneeze, the larger amounts of moisture in the air causes whatever droplets we release from a cough, sneeze, or talking to be bigger. Those droplets are larger in size, and they fall to the ground, they fall to the floor faster, end quote. But in the winter, when the air is drier, those droplets that may contain a virus can hang in the air for longer periods of time and can spread further. It also turns out that a person's immunity is not functioning as well in the winter months. That's because cilia, which are small hair-like projections in the upper respiratory tract that usually move foreign objects out of your nose, don't function as well during the cooler temperatures and lower humidity. Quote, so a virus is able to persist in our upper respiratory tract for longer periods of time, end quote, says Binneker. This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram, Health and Wellness for Wednesday, December 27th, 2023. Midland Health. Partnerships improve care for Permian Basin. It's no secret that nursing and other related healthcare fields face shortages. Filling staffing needs is becoming increasingly difficult nationwide, especially in the Permian Basin. In a 2018 study, the supply of RNs in Texas by 2032 is expected to be in deficit by 57,000 RNs. Vacancy rates across Texas continue to rise, with the latest numbers from hospitals across the state showing over 14,000 open positions. While many initiatives, such as increasing wages, using travel nurses, and creating better work environments, are helpful and long overdue, more emphasis must be placed on retaining and expanding the number of qualified and experienced nurse educators to train future nurses. Nursing faculty shortages and the ability of programs to increase enrollment are of crucial concern to healthcare in the region and state. Last year, more than 20,000 qualified applicants were turned away from Texas nursing schools due to a lack of faculty or clinical sites. Midland and Odessa area schools are not immune from this, as most of our nurses are recruited from and graduated within a 50-mile radius. Midland Health has been innovative in trying to partner with local schools of nursing and other health career schools to not only create a recruiting pipeline, but also help facilitate growth and combine resources. Some examples include paid internships for nursing, respiratory therapy, and other disciplines, bridging the gap from the classroom to practice while helping financially support students. Several Midland Health staff hold adjunct, faculty, or interim leadership roles at the local schools to allow for continued enrollments, and in some cases, increases when it would not be possible otherwise. There are innovative clinical schedules to allow the more than 15,000 clinical hour requests we receive in a year for just nursing. Our partnership with MC and MISD has also led to many advances with our career technology programs and Medical Explorers program, creating pathways for high school students to pursue healthcare careers. When asked about the importance of the academic partnerships, Dr. Michael Hall, interim chair for the School of Nursing at UTPB, shared, quote, academic partnerships, such as the one between Midland Health and the UTPB School of Nursing, are crucial to the success of the school and students. Resources such as faculty, simulation, supplies, and clinical support are challenging for any nursing program to obtain. Midland Health has provided money, faculty, and clinical support for the School of Nursing. The academic partnership between UTPB and Midland Health is a great example of two organizations working together to advance nursing, end quote. Vice President of Midland College, Michael Dixon, expanded on the partnership model. Quote, the partnership between Midland Health and Midland College benefits both institutions and the broader Midland community by fostering the development of highly skilled health professionals. Midland Health goes above and beyond by providing flexible clinical scheduling, preceptors, and expert advice on curriculum and healthcare trends. Midland College is fortunate to have such an ideal partner, end quote. As we enter a new year, we look forward to more opportunities to partner and create advancements in care for the residents of the Permian Basin. Together, Midland Health and our local schools are developing the future of healthcare for generations to come. Sick shaming leads to overuse of cold medicine. At the height of the pandemic, Meg McNamara's employer sent her home with symptoms that looked a lot like COVID, but she knew better. A negative COVID test proved that the 37-year-old's cough and red eyes were just her usual allergies. Determined to not be wrongly accused again, the New York-based physician's assistant turned to over-the-counter medication. She started popping Benadryl every morning to mask her symptoms, but that caused other problems. Quote, it was a nasty experience, end quote, said McNamara, who often suffered from drowsiness, a side effect of Benadryl. Quote, I'm always tired. For me to have a little bit more fatigue in my life is not acceptable, end quote. As the pandemic has receded, McNamara is emblematic of the dilemma facing Americans. They're under pressure to show up for work and social gatherings, yet even the hint of a sniffle can be enough to brand someone an outcast. To cope with these dueling obligations, they're using more cold and allergy meds to cope, and potentially overtreating themselves in the process. In the U.S., sales of upper respiratory over-the-counter medications rose 23% to $11.8 billion in the 52 weeks through early December from the same period in 2019 before the pandemic, according to researcher NIQ. Cold and flu treatments, which make up about a quarter of the category, grew faster with a 30% gain, much to the benefit of OTC producers like Reckitt Benckiser PLC, maker of Mucinex and Procter & Gamble Company, which owns the Vicks and DayQuil brands. At Kenvue Inc., which was spun off from Johnson & Johnson earlier this year, over-the-counter drugs such as allergy treatments Zyrtec and Benadryl and decongestant Sudafed generate about 40% of revenue. Sales at the division housing those brands rose 10% to $4.9 billion in the first 9 months of the year, by far the company's top-performing unit. Brands have at times encouraged customers to load up on over-the-counter meds and carry on, potentially spreading germs. A spot for DayQuil has touted how, quote, life doesn't stop for a cold, end quote. And one for Robitussin, owned by Haleon PLC, shows a woman downing the cough syrup so she can get back to the office. In response to a request for comment, Haleon said it encourages staying home from work when sick and returning when symptoms improve, which is what the Robitussin ad is intended to show. P&G said in a statement that it's best for a person to remain at home if they have a cold or the flu. Meanwhile, consumers may be harming their health. Taking too much of any medication is generally frowned upon by doctors, and doing so increases the risk of side effects, such as high blood pressure from nasal decongestants and the fatigue McNamara experienced from allergy medication. Knee-jerk reaction. It also isn't good to ignore symptoms or try to suppress them entirely, because that can prolong an illness by impacting its natural course, according to Jennifer Bergios, a clinical pharmacist at Single Care, an online pharmacy platform. Quote, these cough and cold symptoms, because there's so much overlap with symptoms of COVID, there's this kind of fear, end quote, Bergios said. That leads to a, quote, knee-jerk, end quote, reaction to use them, which ups the risk of side effects, she said. Simon Williams, a psychology researcher at Swansea University in Wales, has studied the pandemic's impact on social behavior since 2020. He found that people felt an increasing sense of being judged for coughs and sniffles. And while some of that scrutiny has waned, it's likely to remain for some time, he said. The increase in remote work since the pandemic may also be adding to overtreatment. Companies usually guide employees to stay home if ill. But COVID normalized working while sick for many because it could be done in isolation at home without any judgment. And to get through a workday while sick, even from bed, likely takes more meds than just sleeping it off. Recent data also suggests that all workers, whether remote or in person, are calling in sick less often as employers push for more time in the office. A report from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention showed that fewer people this fall have missed work because of illness than in the previous 2 years. Take Courtney Berenson, a product manager in the San Francisco Bay Area. She has asthma that turns a regular cold into a hacking but non-contagious cough that lasts months. Well-meaning coworkers encourage her to work from home in order to set an example for others to stay home when sick. Quote, it feels like I'm setting a bad precedent by coming to work sick, but it will be like a month before I come back if I have to wait until I have no cough, end quote, she said. Her job's return to work policy won't allow for that, so she uses Mucinex to help control her symptoms. Quote, I don't know what would happen if I didn't take it, end quote.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.